this concept of really being able to manage our emotions, spread positive emotional contagion, and consciously manage all of those transitions when we move from meeting to meeting, task to meeting, from home to work and work to home, are critically important for us as leaders if we want to get the best out of those around us. Hi there, and welcome to another episode of the Ben Morton Leadership Podcast. It's the weekly show that brings you inspiring interviews with senior leaders and genuine subject matter experts from all around the world, all designed to help you be the very best leader you can possibly be. It's my gift to you, and it's completely free. Today's episode is a little different, and it's something new for the show. As this is the last episode of season 10, I thought I would do a roundup and share some of my favorite clips from the past season with a little bit of commentary and added insight that we don't always get time for in the main show. So, in today's episode, I have selected four clips from season 10 of the show. And whilst they're all very different, I'm confident they'll all provide valuable information and inspiration to help you be an even better leader over the coming months. So let's dive straight in, and I'm going to share the first clip with you, which comes from episode 150 of the show, featuring Rebecca Creswell, the CEO at Priory Group. Here's the clip. It's something I talk to quite a lot with my clients. So I forget the exact words that you said, but we was due to start recording this at 11:30, I think. And you popped up and said, oh, I've just come off of something really busy, or some sort of word like that. I want to just take 5 minutes to sort of prepare and clear my head, or words to that effect. And I think that is really significant, because in a really positive way, by the way, because I talk a lot to people about, as leaders, managing transitions and how can we show up and be the best version of ourselves, but more importantly, be the person that we're about to speak to needs us to be. And so often we can go straight from a really difficult meeting and rush into another really important meeting that might be someone's one-to-one or a podcast recording. And half of our brain is still on the thing we just done. Researchers call it attention residue. I love the fact that you did what you did, and I encourage leaders to do it a lot. I would much rather have 45 minutes with someone who is fully present and in a good mindset than 60 minutes where half of their focus is on the thing that they were just doing. So I guess two questions that come from that. Like, why did you do that? And in the 10 minutes that you took away, what did you do?
One, I wanted you to know that you're important, and I wanted you to know the facts. I had two choices at that moment when I'd just come back off something. Is, am I late? And then make a reason to Ben. Do I log on now and just explain to Ben the situation? And then he knows, right, that's why. One, I don't like being late. It's something I've worked on. I used to be late a lot, actually. And I remember somebody once saying to me, not about me, about somebody else, actually, who was late, but it really made me think, is it's a really arrogant thing, they said, for somebody to be late, because what it's saying is, I don't mind keeping you all waiting while my important self comes to the meeting. So for me, that really struck a chord with me. So I don't like being late, I like to be timely. And I wanted you to know that I realized that our appointment was important, but I just couldn't be on time at that moment. I wanted to create myself a little bit of a windbreak, if you like, to be able to come to you fully present. Mindfulness is very important to me. It is hard for us as humans to be mindful, actually. We're only mindful about 5 to 10% of the day, which is why we wonder when somebody's supposed to do extreme concentration stuff, why they find it difficult. So you have to practice that. And one of the things I say to my teams, I never allow any emails during my meetings. And if I think people are, I will actually call it out to say, or I'll start the meeting. Everybody knows the sort of rules of engagement now is I say, I don't want you doing emails while you're in the meeting because it's not good for you. And you're not fully mindful then. You're trying to do two things at once. So we actually have very productive meetings because people are fully focused on the discussion. They contribute more, all that kind of stuff. So I totally agree with you that you need to be present, mindful, engaged. And it probably goes back to the social quotient and also the emotional quotient.
Do you allow laptops or devices in meetings?
People do use them a lot for instead of printing stuff out. So from an environmental point of view, that's not a problem. But I don't know whether I've got a very keen sense of hearing. My boys say I don't actually, but that clacky noise gives it away. Yeah. If somebody's typing. And I can even tell now on Teams if somebody's not present because we're so used to that virtual. So I'll ask people if I notice people getting, do we need a break right now? Everybody's in the rhythm of it. So there are laptops. I don't have a laptop myself in front of me because I think it creates a barrier when I'm in a meeting. But I mean, I don't say no to laptops. Nobody would take a phone call or anything that everybody would always say, I've just got to step out, which is perfectly fine. We're all managing really quite important services.
I picked this particular clip for you because this topic of managing transitions as a leader is so, so important. It's something that Brigadier Nick Cowley also spoke about in episode 120 of the show. And transitions are important because there's something called emotional contagion, which the late Sigal Barside, formerly of Wharton Business School, did a huge amount of research into. And to quote her directly from an article that she wrote, she said, "Managers should keep in mind that moods can go viral and be distributed around the office like a group text message." And it's so true, right? I'm sure, aside from the science, we can all relate to that. We've probably all experienced times when we have caught the mood of somebody else, be it good or bad. I'm sure we can all relate to a situation, perhaps, where we have had a slightly erratic boss and we're never quite sure what mood they're going to be in as they walk through the door. And as a result, we feel on edge. We spend our life at work treading on eggshells and desperately trying to predict how they're going to behave in any given moment. And this emotional contagion, it happens on a largely unconscious level, but it is still significant. Sigal Barside's research also found that when a leader in particular comes into work in a positive, useful mood or state, then not only does the mood of the team improve and is replicated, but the team will also cooperate more, they'll make better decisions, and there is reduced levels of interpersonal conflict or tension in the team. So this concept of really being able to manage our emotions, spread positive emotional contagion, and consciously manage all of those transitions when we move from meeting to meeting, task to meeting, from home to work and work to home, are critically important for us as leaders if we want to get the best out of those around us. And hopefully from the clip that I've just shared, you saw a very real example of a very real leader doing just that. Let's now take a listen to the second clip that I've picked for you. And this time it comes from episode 152 and my interview with Sarah Powell, the CEO of British Gymnastics. And in this clip, you will hear us talking about the difference between being respected versus being liked, and the relevance that has in terms of leading an effective team. Here's the clip. I don't know if it's true or not. It is linked to GB kind of rowing and the fact that in the men's eight, in the run-up to, I think it's the 2000 Olympics, whilst they were a great performing team that went on to win gold, they didn't necessarily all like each other, but they could still be a great team. What was your experience of that with hockey for Wales and being a great team versus people liking each other? Because sometimes I think falsely we make a link between a great team is one where everyone is best mates. So what's your view, and have you got any experiences or tips you can share on that for people listening?
I've got to be careful what I say about my teammates now, haven't I? No, I think it's right. You need discourse. You need people with different opinions and different views. And actually, you know, you should spend real time listening to people that don't agree with you, because actually out of that conversation come some of the richer decisions, I think, because you need to understand both perspectives. I think it's not about liking. I think it's about respect. And you know, you don't have to like everybody, but if you can respect people because you've built solid relationships and it's built on trust, then that really sets you apart as a great team, because there will always be times when people don't get on. That's fine. But if you recognize that your role is bigger than your individual feeling, you're actually collectively doing something for the greater good, then that pulls you together. And I think you need that. I think you need somebody that's prepared to stand up and say, no, I don't agree with this, or the way that we're moving forward. And again, coming back to creating those environments where people feel able to do that. And that can only come from a level of respect that you feel you can say, I don't agree, or I've got a different view. And actually, if you've got an environment where that's not happening, you should probably question it. And I get questioned quite a lot about who haven't you listened to? Who aren't you listening to within your sphere? And particularly with social media now, you know, you can get in bubbles where you can believe everything that you're hearing every day.
Now, with that clip, the reason I picked it is partly down to the very final comment that Sarah shared, which was along the lines of, in leadership positions, we have to challenge ourselves and listen to people outside of our comfort zone. And I think that is so true, so important, and so easy to lose sight of. I often do an exercise in my leadership workshops called the Trusted 10, in which I ask people to write down the names of the 10 people in life, so work and out of work, who they trust the most. And once I've done that, I then ask them to sort of think about those people across a range of different categories. So thinking about their gender, perhaps their social status, their sexual orientation, their level of education, and just create a little key. And more often than not, what happens for the vast majority of people is they look at that list across all of those characteristics, they start to realize that the people they trust the most, their most trusted group of advisors or confidants, generally, for most people, tend to be very similar. And that's a problem because it creates blind spots for us. There was a fascinating article written on the BBC news site back in 2019, which was a viewpoint piece entitled, "Was the CIA too white, in inverted commas, to spot the 9/11 clues?" And the article was basically positing and drawing on some evidence that the CIA would never see Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda as a threat, because in that period, the CIA was mostly made up of middle to upper class, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, white Americans who all had similar college degrees and were more often than not from Ivy League universities. Now, to make this more relevant to us and to share an example from that article, it says, well, if you're hiring a relay team, don't you just want the absolute fastest runners you can possibly get on that team? And why would it matter if they were the same colour, gender, or social class, or whatever other factors we might want to consider? And yes, that logic is absolutely sound for a simple task like running a 4x100 metre relay. But the logic doesn't stand up when we get to more complex tasks. And let's face it, more and more in the workplace today, we are dealing with complex, wicked problems. And when a problem is complex, no one person will have all of the answers. We all have blind spots and gaps in our knowledge and understanding. So what this means is that if we bring a group of people together who all share similar perspectives and backgrounds, they're all liable to share exactly the same blind spots. And this is a real challenge. It means our blind spots just get reinforced and we find ourselves working in a real echo chamber where there is no diversity of thought. So to Sarah's point, it's critically important for us as a leader to speak to people outside of our normal circle and then to encourage healthy discourse and debate in our meetings. So yes, it's nice to have a team where we all like one another, but to Sarah's point, it's even more important to have a team where there's a degree of diversity and we have respect for each other. The next clip I've selected for you comes from episode 154 with Pete Fletcher, who is the CEO of World Challenge. Now, what you're about to hear is a really powerful story around pausing to reflect on success. Here's the clip. What are some things that you think they can practically take and use in their organizations to, I guess it's about building the culture, building that collective mindset, right?
Yeah, thanks for asking that, Ben. It's such a vivid memory for me. I suppose just to sort of try and convey it a little bit, you know, the row was not easy. We 98 days on the ocean.
Is that the world's biggest understatement? The row was not easy. That says a lot about your character, Pete.
Well, to be honest, Ben, we made it difficult. You know, it could have been a lot easier, but we stuffed up enough things that we made it difficult. We rebuilt an old timber rowing boat. We decided we'd make our own food on a ketogenic diet, so high-fat food that's hard to dehydrate. Oh, we didn't literally make it, but we had someone make it. Because we rebuilt the boat, we you know, ourselves with a boat builder, we had massive gear failure. We lost 40% of our food spoiled, so we were rationed for 7 weeks. The water maker kit was almost packing up, so there's too much salt in the water we were drinking. You know, there was all sorts of things that made it incredibly difficult. And so we kind of got over the line of 5 degrees west, and then the following day I saw land. Actually, we'd had a food drop as we crossed the line, or after we crossed the line, from the Navy, right, which was they were actually out on exercise, so it wasn't like they came out to give us a food drop, but it was we were so grateful.
They must have been the first people you'd seen, right?
They were, yeah, they were. And they're in a rib, you know, four of them. And we kind of got, including the chef. And you know, they were kind of, I don't know, I suppose, you know, you get dropped out on a rib. They're probably not out on a rib every day, many miles from land. And we were there just sort of taking the food over the rail, just so grateful. But the point is, Tom there was about 4 days worth of food, and Tom Pollard, well, I had some too, but Tom had the lion's share in about 19 hours gone. So he was pretty sick, because he'd taken a real bullet for the team in a way, because he had drunk more of the water that was too salty. We had a certain amount of ballast water that we could sort of mix and all the rest of it. And he was more physically resilient than I was at that stage. So I was drinking more of that ballast water and he was drinking more of the salt water. He then ate so much of the food and he was almost in a really bad state. So I wasn't sure when we got to land, you know, I wasn't sure exactly what medical care he might need, but he was, what it meant, the reason I'm telling is because I was on deck on my own. and for that penultimate day, and we had an amazing following wind. So I was rowing, effortless rowing after what we'd done, and full belly, just trying to get us in as quick as we could, and beautiful sunshine, right? So it was really a rare conditions, but we'd crossed the line and there was that sort of sense of achievement. And then basically I saw land that afternoon, and it was just, you know, I kind of got goosebumps actually thinking about it, but it was just unbelievable.
So have I, listening to you.
It was amazing, right? Because we knew we'd made it, and you know, I knew my wife and kids were there in Cornwall. And the reason I sort of share that story like that is because it was very special, and it was the kind of time, it was a brief moment where I was able to sort of say for a few hours, yeah, wow, you know, you should enjoy this moment. And I really tried to do that. But the point is, I suppose, you know, to your question, how do you take that into life? And I think you actually mentioned, you know, going from crisis to crisis or from goal to goal. And I think it can be either or in a way. What I have done at certain times and what I try to do is, you know, that was land I saw that day, right? And it's the very land that is underneath my chair right now and that, you know, that we walk on every day and step out of bed into, right, onto. And so I actually, it sounds really a bit, perhaps a bit abstract, but I sometimes literally just look at the ground and remember that moment of seeing land. And I can literally, when I do it, feel my heart rate slow and some of the emotions kind of come back, and maybe I even smile, you know. And I think what it does, it sort of takes me back to that place, out of the crisis or out of the striving for the next goal, to just, do you know what I mean? You know, just really appreciate gratitude for not just the land on that day, but everything in life and everything that land represents, I suppose.
Yeah, that's amazing, Pete. And actually, I think that's something that's really relevant that kind of we can all take and use, whether we're a leader or not. And kind of on that one, right, I think I subscribe to the same view as you, that kind of we can all be a leader regardless of title. But my point is, we all get stressed and triggered, right, at various points during the working day or the working week. And one of the things I often talk about sort of from the world of neuro-linguistic programming is having some sort of anchor or trigger that causes you to step out of the moment and reset. And just from your experience and then just looking at the ground or touching the ground is an incredible anchor, right? Because it brings back those sort of positive emotions from that moment and changes the heart rate. And we all have got some sort of really powerful, vivid experience when we was at our happiest, calmest, that we can try and take ourselves back to in those moments, just to reset when we need to. So that's super powerful.
Yeah, well said. I think that's exactly what it's like. And so much of it, I think life happens, it all happens between the ears, doesn't it?
I picked this clip with Pete Fletcher for you for a couple of reasons. Firstly is, as I was listening to that episode back, it reminded me of a quote from the song Beautiful Boy or Darling Boy by John Lennon, which goes like this. Life is what happens to you whilst you're busy making plans. Now, I think Pete's point around, and Pete's story rather, around how he was able to pause and reflect and really enjoy those final hours as he completed his row is so important, as you heard me mentioning in the clip. And it just happens so often in work and the world of business, where we just move from project to project to project, from task to task to task, without ever stopping to pause and celebrate success, let alone analyze success so we can repeat and optimize it. And I find this just the case in so many organizations, that we don't invest nearly enough time in pausing to reflect, to share and enjoy the success. We tend to be pretty good at analyzing failures and learning the lessons when things don't go well, but we could and should be doing the same when things do go well. The second reason I chose that clip for you is around Pete's comment towards the end of the clip, where he said, sometimes he'll just look at the ground around him and how that can instantly take him back to the moment when he stepped foot on dry land after, I think he said, 98 days at sea, and how it really connected him back strongly with the feelings and emotions he had at that time. And I mentioned how that links to the NLP or neuro-linguistic programming concept of anchoring. Now, in the main episode, I didn't have time to go into that with you, but I can here. So here's how it works. Firstly, I'd like you to think of a situation where you'd really like to be in a different state. For argument's sake, let's say it's when you're about to give a big presentation to a large audience. And perhaps like many of us, you start feeling the nerves and the anxiety and the chest starts beating. And once you've done that, pause and think about what is the ideal state you would like to be in at that moment. It could be calm and focused or whatever it might be. It might be energized and sort of buzzing, I don't know. So identify the state you would like to be in. And then think of a time in your life when you were in that state. Once you've done that, I really want you to go back to that point in time. Think about whether at that moment in time you were sitting or standing. Let's say for argument's sake that it was on a sun lounger on holiday in the Maldives. Now, try and adopt the physiology you were in that moment. As I say, if you were sitting in that sun lounger by the pool, maybe sit down in a chair. And I really want you to use all of your senses to take yourself back to that moment in time. And you can do it with me here whilst you're listening to this episode, as long as you're not driving or anything like that. So, how did it feel? What was your breathing like? Could you feel the warmth of the sun on your skin? What were you thinking, perhaps? What thoughts were going through your head? What could you hear? What were the sounds around you? Was there any music? If there wasn't music, what soundtrack would you pick to go with that particular moment? And then when you really can feel yourself back in that moment, I want you to imagine that you are watching that on a big TV screen, and then suddenly dial it up to 4K and Dolby surround sound to make it really, really vivid. And once you're there, once you've got that vivid picture and you can feel yourself in that moment, take your thumb and forefinger of your left hand and really squeeze them together as hard as you possibly can. Keep squeezing, keep squeezing, feel the pressure and stop. Now, that is what we call setting an anchor. What you can now do in your own time is repeat that process several more times of really going back to that moment in time, making it a rich, vivid, bold picture with all of your senses. And when you're there, squeeze your thumb and forefinger of your left hand together. As you repeat that, it will set the anchor. And then back to our example, when you want to access that particular state, maybe when you're about to go on stage and give that presentation, just before you walk out in front of the audience, you can use that anchor, pinch your thumb and forefinger together, and that will take you back to that moment in time, just as looking at the land does for Pete Fletcher. Hope it's been useful on that one. And if you want to know more, you can just do some research yourself around NLP or neuro-linguistic programming and anchors. Okay, the final clip I wanted to share in this season 10 roundup comes from episode 159 with Alex Higham, the founder and CEO of Exhale Healthy Coffee. And I picked this particularly because of his comments and thoughts around approaching work as a game. Here's the clip for you. There's a great book I read called The Great Game of Business, which very much focuses on that. But on a practical day-to-day basis, if you are seeing your role in Exhale Coffee as a game, what does that mean you're doing? How does that mean perhaps you're showing up differently to somebody who has left the corporate world as you did, taken all of those strongly defined perceptions and conventions about work and just lifted them, shifted them into running their own business? Like, what does seeing it as a game, how does that manifest itself?
You have to decide what the game is for you. What do you want? What do you enjoy getting out of the business? What is it? And for some people, it might initially, it was, I really enjoyed building the community side of the business, and I still do. But currently the game is trying to figure out what's going to move the needle on the growth of the business, and then mastering that, and then focusing my time on that, and then handing over kind of other stuff. So it's kind of, currently we have this big opportunity around Meta, Facebook ads. We've never really done it before. We have a big opportunity there, and it's serving video ad content, but it's a huge opportunity. And I know it will move the needle and could potentially deliver some pretty substantial rapid growth in the business. So I've now shifted my attention, and the game now has become, how can I master video ads and creatives, testing loads of different types of ads? And it's just really bringing out that science geek in me, the data analysis, like looking for trends and patterns and analyzing things and going, if we serve this type of ad, what's the immediate impact? What's the long-term impact? If we do this type of ad, if I'm in this video, and then, you know, we figured out that videos of me work best in the ads. And, you know, I was a massive introvert. Well, I am a massive introvert, but
I could have told you that just from meeting you twice. I could have told you videos of you would work best.
I know, how funny that. But I am a massive introvert, and that kind of thing would have like filled me with absolute dread and fear. But, you know, because I will do anything for the business, I'm like, right, I will just embrace it. I will master it. And now I genuinely think that I probably have mastered the art of video ads, crafting the perfect video ad, thinking about the hook, the kind of the middle, the call to action, how to analyze them in Ads Manager, and looking at hook ratios and all these different CPMs and CPA, whatever, you know, things I'd never thought of before. But it's been really fun learning about it, and it's been really fun analyzing it and looking for trends and optimizing it. And that's the game currently. You know, in 6 months' time, it might be something else, and it just transitions.
There are two things that I took from this episode that I really wanted to spend some time exploring and highlighting for you. Number one was the underlying quality, I guess, that Alex spoke about in the clip around curiosity. And just for a moment, think about your level of curiosity when you suddenly find a passion for something new. If you suddenly get into a new game or a new hobby, what tends to happen for many of us, if we're truly, truly passionate about that thing, is that we start to get really curious. We will, depending on our learning style and preferences, we'll read everything we can get our hands on. We can easily go down a rabbit warren for hours on end on YouTube, watching videos about this particular thing, consume huge amounts of social media content around our new passion. So that being the case, based on what Alex shared with us and his approach to building an incredible business, I really encourage you to take some time to pause and find a way to spend more time on the parts of your job, the parts of work that you truly love the most. Spend the time to really focus on and spend time on the bits that feel like a fun game to you. And when you do that, just as Alex has found, your results will start to go through the roof, and you'll just have so much more energy and passion for what it is that you're doing. And I'm sure you'll agree there, listening to Alex Higham talking, he is a man who is full of energy and passion and is working some pretty long hours to build a business, but he's building a business he loves. The second thing to share from that episode, and the second reason I picked it, is linked to Alex's point about being really uncomfortable being in front of a video because he's an introvert at heart, but how he almost felt the fear and did it anyway, to use that quote, and without wanting to be sort of terribly cliched about it. And I absolutely get what he's talking about there. Despite what I do for a living, despite spending a lot of time standing on big stages, talking to hundreds of people, I am an introvert at heart. Now, as you know, that doesn't mean I'm shy. It just means I get a lot of my energy from smaller, more intimate conversations and being with smaller groups of people. I get a lot of energy from recharging quietly by myself. So introversion, extroversion isn't necessarily about how comfortable you are in front of large audiences and on camera, but it could be a part of it. And I am just the same. If I think back to my business journey 11 years ago, I absolutely hated being in front of a camera and doing any sort of video. And I was absolutely terrible at it. I'd like to think 11 years on, I'm better at it. I'm certainly much more comfortable doing it these days. Okay. But here's the really interesting and valuable point. I'm not suggesting, nor is Alex, that you need to be able to master the ability to stand in front of a camera and speak to camera. Nor do you necessarily need to be able to master the ability to stand on a stage and talk to large groups of people. As a senior leader, I would suggest it's probably key that you can do that with a degree of comfort, but not necessarily essential. What I am encouraging you to think about, though, is to think about any gaps you might have in your skill set, to think about anything you might perceive as a weakness, and then spend some time analysing it a little more deeply. Don't just take the common corporate approach to personal development, where we think we must identify a skills gap or a weakness and then build a plan to fix it, because that's not necessarily the right approach. Instead, yes, identify those gaps or potential weaknesses, but then ask yourself, is this a limiting weakness or an allowable weakness? This is an approach used in StrengthScope, the personality profiling tool that I'm a big, big fan of, that's heavily based in positive psychology. So a limiting weakness would be a skills gap we have, where it is critical that we have that skill for success in our role. A very simple example might be, let's say, if you are working in accountancy, auditing and attention to detail isn't a skill that you have, that's potentially or probably a significant skills gap for you. There's going to be a limiting weakness. Okay. If you are a coder, but relationship building isn't a real strength of yours, that might be an allowable weakness. So we don't necessarily need to work on every skills gap or weakness that we have. But if it is a limiting weakness, then sometimes we might need to just feel the fear and do it anyway. Or perhaps we could look to recruit people in our team that can compensate for some of our deficiencies in certain areas. So that is it for my 4 top picks from season 10 of the podcast. I really hope these clips have been interesting, and having the extra time here to just delve into them and explore them have been really useful for you. Before you go, let me just share a couple of quick things with you. And the first one is, please also go and check out the Leaders Kit Bag episode of the podcast. It's the new-ish micro edition of the show. Each episode is just 5 or 6 minutes long, and it focuses on one very specific practical element of leadership. And as with everything that I do, it is all designed to help you be the very best leader you can possibly be. And once you've listened to them, do please share them with your colleagues and friends so that together we can improve the leadership capability in our organizations, our charities, and our institutions. Because you've heard me say this before, but I really do believe that the world needs great leaders now more than ever. And once you've done listening to the Leaders Kit Bag and sharing them with your colleagues, do head over to my website at ben-morton.com, where you can subscribe to my mailing list and get a 2-weekly roundup of my latest blogs, videos, leadership tips and tactics, and the hottest new podcast episodes that I'm putting out. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for supporting the show. And until next time, look after yourself, look after those you've got the privilege and responsibility to lead, and as always, folks, lead on.